Redacted Media and GhostHat.net present The Film Illogical Society. On today's episode, we continue our countdown of the BBC's 100 Greatest Comedies of All Time. And now, here are your hosts, Chris Scholes and Chad Halverson.
The city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
What do you mean, biblical?
What he means is Old Testament, Mr.
Yes.
Mayor. Real wrath of God type stuff.
Exactly.
Fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes.
The dead rising from the grave.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
All right, welcome to another episode. Now, I know that this one is going to be a reach for us, right? This is number 95 on the list. It's first of all, my name is Chris Scholes, your host, as the mysterious voice said, and with me as always is
Chad Halverson.
Ha ha. Yes, Chad Halverson for the top 100 comedies of all time, the list show. So today is a film many of you may not have heard of. It came out in 1984.
So long ago.
Yeah, so long. The name of it am I pronouncing this correct? Boosters?
Yes, it's a German expressionist film called Boosters.
Yeah, it was thoroughly not what I was expecting it to be. I can tell you that, but no, Ghostbusters.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. Ghostbusters. 1984 film directed by Ivan Reitman, written by Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis. All a large contingency of SNL and
Second City
television actors.
A lot of Second City Toronto people. Nuts.
Yeah.
The old guard.
So, as you do normally, Chad, why don't you give a little bit of a brief synopsis of this film? I know this is one of your favorites, so I will time you.
Yes. Okay. So, I didn't watch this movie for this week, only because I've seen it a lot, more than I'm willing to, admit to. But the story of Ghostbusters is the story of three failed scientists who figure out how to capture ghosts. And apparently there's this big ghost problem in New York City. So they buy an old firehouse and they get their first client. And, there's some ups and downs, but they get it. And now New York City's filled with ghosts and they got to bust them. And
roll credits.
Yeah, roll credits. And then there's a love interest with Sigourney Weaver, and, they get some cultural diversity by bringing the black guy in, two-thirds of the way in the film, but, hey, it was 1984, and what the hell?
Well, so just to kind of delve in, so Ernie Hudson is the black guy.
Yes.
Originally, it was supposed to be Eddie Murphy, and he would have had a much bigger role.
Yeah.
But when Eddie Murphy said, he was doing this little movie called Beverly Hills Cop. I don't know if you ever heard of it. It's a pretty big film. It may be on the list. But he was doing that, so he had to turn it down. So then they rewrote it, and Ernie Hudson wasn't as well known. He's probably one of the few of the top cast members not to be SNL associated.
He's like the only straight guy there.
Yeah. So you had him, you have Bill Murray, you have Dan Aykroyd, you have Harold Ramis.
Rick Moranis.
Rick Moranis, Sigourney Weaver, as you said. Just a lot of, just for such a big cast, so many names. I don't know if you want, I don't think you could collect this much talent again. And I immediately thought of the new Ghostbusters movie, and that had a lot of talent in it as well. But the fact that all this talent was concentrated basically on Saturday Night Live and on SCTV, that's where they pulled most of this from.
Yeah.
That is the impressive thing.
I mean, I could.
It tells you.
I could argue the same thing happened when they made Wayne's World. Like, I know they're two completely different movies, but it's the same idea. It's the SNL cast from the late 70s, early 90s, you know, just, you know, marching all over that film. But yeah, I agree. Like, it was lightning in a bottle, and nobody knew it at the time. Like, they thought they were just going to make a funny sci-fi movie, and I don't think they knew that it was going to, you know, inject itself into the cultural zeitgeist so much, especially with kids.
Well yeah, it was a horror sci-fi comedy that was geared towards adults.
Yeah.
It was a hard PG at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because there wasn't PG-13 yet. But it would have been. And yeah, it became a kid's favorite. I mean, I know growing up, I loved it as a kid.
Oh yeah.
You loved it as a kid, obviously.
Oh yeah.
It spawned how many comic books, books?
Cartoons.
Saturday morning cartoons of different Ghostbuster teams.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy.
Lunch boxes. Oh man, Ecto Cooler. Man, that stuff came out. It was 2 years ago. They re-released it, and a buddy of mine bought me like four—not pallets, but they came in like a big stack. So I had like 70 of them.
Yeah, you know, I still have never had.
All it is their orange drink. Nowadays, yeah. That's all it is. But yeah, back in the day, high fructose corn syrup. Oh man, oh so good.
80s high fructose corn syrup is the best.
It's like pure 80s cocaine. It's just not as good anymore.
I mean, except for the actual cocaine in the 80s, that was the pure 80s cocaine. You're right.
Oh, yeah.
So one thing about... So the real Ghostbusters, they had all the characters... Yet they were all slightly different. Like Egon in that one is a blonde.
Yeah, I
never understood that. Why they had that? They made them caricatures of the original cast.
I think it's probably because they didn't want to pay royalties to the likeness. That would be my guess. I'd have to look it up. But
yeah, I don't know. I don't know. They're just
a blonde Egon is always weird.
Yeah, I don't know if they're trying to divert like. Blonde people do not like the Ghostbusters. We need to do something. They can't relate. There's no blonde people in it. Okay, we'll make Egon blonde. Done.
E-blonde.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the writers. So both Harold Ramis and Dan Aykroyd, this is their early days, right? So they were, right? I mean, obviously they both came from comedy troupes where they wrote as well.
Yeah.
You know, and Harold Ramis had some very good movies.
Yeah, that, Meatballs, you know, after this. Caddyshack, Stripes. Stripes being like one of my favorite films growing up because it had boobs. And it was also funny. Well,
it met the 80s comedy standard where Ghostbusters does not.
Yeah, that's true. If we would have gotten that that hard R, we would have been able to see boobs.
Yeah, maybe, quite possibly some demon boobs.
I was going to say, you could already sort of see Gozer's demon boobs. Because it's just bubbles, but, you know, it's really not my thing. Gozer was never really a turn-on for me.
No?
No.
No, you prefer the devil dogs?
Oh, the demon dogs? Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I hear they like it rough. You're welcome.
I can, editing note, add in the drum thing for Hans. Okay. I'm going to leave that in, by the way. So.
Yeah, I can't think of what would be funnier.
So, yeah, let's talk a little bit, you know, so Dan Aykroyd is somebody to me that was always hit or miss. Like, in the 80s, he ruled in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Like, anything he wrote, Blues Brothers, Ghostbusters, just phenomenal. Then he just couldn't get past those franchises.
Yeah, and I mean, it happens, and like, but then, you know, at the same time, he really didn't try to veer from that, you know what I mean? Like, he, you know, no. There was a Ghostbusters 2, there was a Caddyshack 2, you know, I don't know. I just I felt like he never. Or sorry, that was Harold Ramis. He didn't write that, but Dan Aykroyd. Like he just always. I don't know. I felt like he just never. He remember that awful show, like in the late '90s. That was I'm trying to think of. He was like a priest. It's when it comes to me.
As an actor?
Yeah, he was an actor. He wrote it and he was a producer. It was horrible. It was so bad. Soul Man. That's what it was. Soul Man. Like, I'm a soul man. Because, you know, Blues Brothers. And they thought they could make a show around it. It was awful.
I mean, I remember his role in Dr. Detroit. Which is an 80s movie that I love. At least I did. That is something that on another podcast that we both are part of, the Rewatchmen, that I would love to do a Dr. Detroit Rewatchmen.
I don't know. I felt like his writing was the best in the 80s, and then he sort of was more of an actor in the early 90s, and then he, not that he fell off, but he just... You know, he did a lot of cameos or little one hits there. Although he was Yogi Bear,
voice of Yogi Bear.
Oh yeah.
Well, I mean, he had a lot of hits though too. I mean, he you know, the '80s. You know, outside of the two franchises we mentioned, Spies Like Us, with Chevy Chase, is a funny movie. Mm-hmm. Dragnet is one of those that is underrated, I think.
Totally.
I think people didn't get it because it was kind of ahead of its time, right? Like in the late 90s and early 2000s, it was all about remaking old TV shows and making fun of them.
Yeah.
Starsky and Hutch and all that. Dragnet came out in, 87?
Yep.
And it was really ahead of its time.
Yeah.
In many ways.
Yeah, you have your 21 Jump Streets and your, you know... Name an intellectual property from the Chips, all those, you know, cop shows that are being remade. It was just really weird to see Dragnet, which, you know, back in the day, like our parents grew up watching Dragnet, and it was like gritty. And do you remember the episode? This is a tangent, but remember that episode where it was they were going after the reefer heads? And I just remember the image of like let me paint the picture. This couple gets so high that they forget that they leave their baby in the tub, which is the stupidest thing ever. But I just like, and you watched it like growing up,
reefer.
And it was, you know, like when that show came out, it was really tough to see that stuff. But imagine taking like The Death of an Infant Child by Stupid Stoners, but then making that funny. Like that's what the Dragnet movie was. It was a complete 180, where it was this hardened detective cop trying to be that in the 1980s and having a foil sidekick. And oh, wasn't Joe Friday's real partner the chief in the movie too?
I think yeah. So. Yeah. So the cameos, the callbacks to the original show, Dan Aykroyd set that standard. Let's just give him the credit now that he's due. He deserves it.
I don't know. He was also in Pixels.
Well, we talked about his 90s, 2000 airs. You know, this was still 80s when he ruled.
Listen, I'm going to make fun of Dan Aykroyd, and you're just going to have to deal with it.
That's fine. That's fine. I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. So let's talk a little bit about his co-writer.
The late, great Harold Ramis.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I mean...
How long ago what did he pass away?
It was 3 years... Oh, 2014. So, yeah.
2014. So he wrote so many movies that it's like I wasn't aware of all the movies he actually wrote.
Yeah.
You know, because he was such a prolific writer. I mean, we talked about Caddyshack, Meatballs, Stripes, but he wrote Animal House. That was one of his first films. Ghostbusters, Back to School, Armed and Dangerous. Caddyshack 2. We can forget about that one. Groundhog Day.
He also turned into a pretty decent director, too.
Yeah, like he did, and his son is very good too.
Oh, you're talking about Ivan Reitman. We're still talking about Harold Ramis.
Yeah, you're right.
Because Harold Ramis did Groundhog Day, which is another great, great, great Bill Murray movie.
Yeah, he wrote it and directed
and
it.
Put himself in it. That's when he started getting fatter too. But then it made me feel good because I was fat too, and I'm like, oh, thank you, Harold, for making me feel included.
Yeah, so I mean, just a really dynamic writing team, really. I mean, just awesome. And considering who this movie could have had originally it was supposed to be John Belushi and not Bill Murray, mm-hmm. and it was supposed to be Eddie Murphy, not
Eddie Hudson or Ernie Hudson.
Ernie Hudson. I will edit that space out.
So it doesn't sound like we're super racist. Good point.
Right. So pick up right here, Ernie Hudson. So it's supposed to be can you imagine? Because Annie Potts holds her own in this film too.
You know what? I want to talk about this. I don't like the way Annie Potts' character was turned into like this. I don't know. She was always like kind of a freak in the first movie, but she liked Egon. And then in the second movie, she gets like a haircut and totally turns into like this Valley Girl type thing. I never got that transition.
No, I liked her. Yeah, her role in the first film was the best. And that's the role they kind of took in the cartoon as well. Is that she was kind of out there and kind of weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she went from liking Egon to, I think in the second one, it was
Louis Tully,
which is, I even as a kid, I was like, hey, wait a minute.
Wait.
That's not right.
Did Egon hit it and quit it?
I don't think Egon did. Maybe Egon didn't do anything. He was more interested in publishing his Twinkie theory.
And spores, mold, and fungus.
Right. That's what he was focused on.
Egon always has the best, like, they're so droll and stupid, but I had part of a slinky once, but I straightened it. Like, just stupid stuff like that.
I think if you break it down, like, if you were to listen, just, like, focus on one of the characters at a time, it would be so much funnier, because they're doing a lot of improv, right? I mean, all these actors are skilled enough to do the improv.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think with Harold Ramis, he just did the straight man improv so well.
Yeah. Underrated.
Like he's over, you know, I think Slimer takes a bigger name and Stay Puft Marshmallow Man is a bigger name in the film. Bill Murray's character is bigger. And then, you know, Egon is kind of like, I don't want, you know, you're playing in the playground. Like, I don't want to be Egon. He's a nerd. But he's hilarious.
I don't know, man. Again, I go back to my Ninja Turtles theory. If you didn't have Donatello, you wouldn't have the blimp, the turtle car, like, all the cool stuff. Like, and yeah, Harold, or,
Egon,
but also Dan Aykroyd, like, they're both the inventors in it, but, like, Egon's definitely the smarter one.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And what's always weird to me is that in canon, Winston, Ernie Hudson's character, is actually the most brilliant out of all of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, he has, like, all these doctorates and all that. Like, he's like, this super, super smart guy. Can blow them all out of the water. Yet he shows up, two-thirds away in the movie, like, hey, yeah. I want a job. You're hired.
All the other guys are doctors except him. He's just Winston.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about what I think really just grabs this movie. So the opening scene is you're introduced to the characters, right? You're introduced first to Venkman. Venkman is doing tests on college. They're work at a college campus. And to me, this is one of the best character introductions in film.
Yeah, it's very simple, but within a span of 2 minutes, you know that he's a doctor, you know that he's a smartass, and you know that he likes hitting on women. And really,
and he's okay abusing his power.
Yeah. And he takes the easy way out. Like, it you're right. It's one of the easiest like character introductions ever because it's very easy to follow. But it's so good because it's really funny.
Yeah, it's super funny, and you know it kind of goes to show that he's not. He shows that he's not 100% believer. Right? Like, Ray and Egon, they are fully on board. Venkman is kind of like, I don't know, guys.
But once he sees the financial prospect with it, then he's all on board.
Right.
But I guess every scientific group needs one of those guys, the guy that's paying attention to the money versus the guys that are thinking in the clouds and thinking of the cool stuff.
That's right. So this is, I think we both can agree, even though we haven't looked at the rest of the list, 95 seems a little low for this film.
I remember making that comment when we first started doing this. I feel like, not that it has to be number one or even in the top 10, but, like Zoolander, like, that's 88. Really? I mean, yeah, Zoolander's funny and but...
And I think when we look at some of these films, like as we get there, we can talk about them a little bit more and just kind of like their impact. I think culturally, out of the films that we've watched so far, this is the biggest cultural impact that we've had so far. Like Ghostbusters, they are still a thing 30, 40 years later.
Well...
You know, like they're not going away either. They've been relaunched. There's going to be more Ghostbusters. We know this.
Well, and
whether it's cartoon, whether it's live action, there's going to be more Ghostbusters. It's not going away.
And also, too, we got to look at. I mean, I love this film only because it was out when I was born, and you know, it's as old as me, and I love this movie. But that's it's a very nostalgic feeling, I'm sure. And we also got to look at this. We're looking at a BBC top list. What's funny over here isn't necessarily the same type of funny over in England.
That's true. That is true.
But they got Groundhog Day at number 4, you know, and they have, you know, Blues Brothers is on here at 53, you know, Caddyshack 65, so maybe in Britain they have their priorities backwards.
Maybe. Well, I am glad though that most of these actors and most of the writers and directors will get to talk about them more in upcoming films.
Yes.
I think that's you know, if you're gonna be introduced, like, you know, I guess, okay, so doing this list, seeing all those other films done by, you know, this group, Ivan Reitman, Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis, Bill Murray. If someone were to say, hey, I've never seen any of those films, which one should I watch first? I think this might be it.
Yeah. I
sense you don't quite agree with me.
Oh, man, I don't know. It really depends on the person, because I don't know. Like, you're talking, like, Caddyshack. You're talking Animal House. Trying to think of all the... Second City.
Yeah. All those that we just talked about, too, right? Like Groundhog Day, Blues Brothers, Caddyshack.
I'm going to go against my nostalgia. I feel like Groundhog Day is probably the most accessible because it's just a straight comedy, but it also has a really good message versus Ghostbusters, where if you're really not a sci-fi person or if you don't necessarily like scary stuff, not that it's scary, but... I do remember people being freaked out about it, you know? I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying shut up.
Okay, well, let's talk. I think one person that we won't be talking about that we haven't already, again, is Ivan Reitman, the director of this film. And to me, like, whenever I saw his name, I expected a comedy. As you see, you know what I mean? Like, there's some directors that are just good at something.
Yep.
he's good at comedies. So his comedies, so he's been connected with Harold Ramis and all that. He directed Meatballs, Stripes, Twins, Kindergarten Cop. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is when he got into the Arnold phase with Junior. So, yeah, and you know, and he's not as prolific as some directors. I mean, it looks like he's every other year, every couple of years, he'll have a new film out.
I forgot he did Kindergarten Cop. Oh, I love that movie.
So I don't believe any of these films are on our list.
No. No. Well, wait.
Not even Legal Eagle.
Is Meatballs, though? Or Stripes?
I don't know. Huh. And we will find out. Let's not ruin the entire list. I know that everyone can look, but I'm hoping people don't understand the internet. There.
Hey, Matt, after all the friggin' Senate and
this list is on Facebook, everyone. Sorry you got rid of it.
Here, real quick, just scrolling through Ivan Reitman's IMDb. Apparently, they announced a Stripes TV series. And I don't know how I feel about that, because I love that movie so much.
Yeah, you know, it all depends on how you do it. I think you have to... we'll talk about Stripes maybe another day.
Fine, sure. You're the boss.
So let's talk about everyone's favorite 80s villain. William Atherton.
Walter Peck. Oh, man.
Walter Peck in this film with 75 pounds of shaving cream dumped at him.
Yeah, and he almost got actually, he did get hypothermia because the shaving cream that they dumped on him for the melted marshmallows had menthol in it, which cools. I don't know if you've ever had menthol on your skin, but it cools your skin. And yeah, he almost froze to death from shaving cream.
Well, I mean, 75 pounds of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, come on. It's like... It's like the blood flood in The Shining. Like, go big or go home, man.
Right. But yeah, he basically reprised that same character for a couple other movies in the 80s as well, but playing that bad guy.
Yeah, a little movie you probably never heard of called Die Hard.
Was he in 2 as well?
Yeah, because he was stuck on the plane with Holly McClain.
Oh, that's right.
Because Die Hard 2 is like, hey, let's just make a direct sequel to 2, and then 3, they're like, hey, let's add Samuel Jackson and make this completely different.
So, the last scene I want to talk about is the ending. So in the ending, they defeat the big bad by crossing the streams, even though they said they never should cross the streams. They did it.
You're going to endanger us. You're going to endanger our client, the nice lady who paid us in advance before she turned into a dog.
I just like how that just... Well, anyway. So, in the beginning... You know, so we talked about, like, the opening of the film where you get the character of Venkman so quickly in that opening act. I think the end of it as well... perfectly describes all the characters when you measure the amount of marshmallow on them.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, you see who definitely got paid the most and who got paid the least by that end credit sequence. It's so funny.
Because, yeah, Bill Murray just has a little bit on his head, like, you can barely
just
tell.
Just a skosh. Well, and
Egon, Ray, and Egon are just covered. And so with Ernie Hudson.
Yeah, well, and Bill Murray's the love interest, and so is Dana Barrett. So you really can't have them, you know, foaming at the mouth literally at each other. But it is funny how, you know, once every, like, the dust is settled, then they all kind of, like, find each other. Bill Murray's the only one that didn't get any. Like, typical Venkman move. Like, he
jumped out early.
He jumped out early enough just to miss it. And it's totally his character.
Himself. Yep. Yep. All right. So, I'm guessing from this review that this is going to be one of your lower rated films. Not quite up on the list yet. No. So this is, I think, for both of us, like, right up there. For me, it's between this and The Jerk of all the films that we've seen so far. With The Jerk probably with a slight lead over this.
That's fine. Like, I'm gonna say this is my favorite movie on the list so far. And, I mean, it's the one I'm most comfortable with. But the next two coming up, I mean, are pretty close to my heart as well. So
next time we are going to, this is, I think, Wes Anderson. I'm surprised we don't have more Wes Anderson. But this is I believe, his second film.
Yeah.
Rushmore.
Yep. Because his first one was Bottle Rocket.
Yep. And another Bill Murray film.
Well, it's not a Wes Anderson film if you don't have the Bill Murray.
That's true. But so our next film is 1998's Rushmore. By the way, if you are interested in watching Ghostbusters or the not as good sequel, Ghostbusters 2, they are available on Netflix right now. So if you have Netflix, want to check out Ghostbusters because it's been a while, or you decided to listen to us without seeing the movie ever or having any concept of it. It's on Netflix. It's on Netflix right now. Go watch it.
Did we say if we talk about, like, what would be something we'd recommend based off of this?
I think we kind of did. Like, we talked about the other films that are coming up on our list.
Yeah, that'll count.
You know, any from that group. And I think we both agreed nothing from Dan Aykroyd written in the 90s or later. Like, Blues Brothers 2000 or whatever, you don't need to watch that. You know, anytime that John Belushi is replaced by John Goodman, don't watch it.
Aw.
And I love John Goodman. But you can't do that. But we'll talk about that when we talk about the Blues Brothers, because that is on the list. So.
Hell yeah.
All right, Chad, any final thoughts or anything you want to plug?
Ghostbusters. Let me try that again without sounding like a 4-year-old.
Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters, like, I definitely have a slanted bias towards this movie. I know it's not perfect, but it definitely was the catalyst, or one of the catalysts to get me to, you know, appreciate film at an early age. Like, I didn't know that I was going to go into something like that, but movies like Ghostbusters captivated my imagination, you know, even though you can go back now and see all the puppets and how they, you know, mixed in practical effects with visual effects, and it was early on, but I don't know. It's definitely, give it your time. If you like a goofy comedy, it's pretty simple. So
simple. It's a cross genre film, you know, sci-fi,
simple.
Horror and comedy.
Yeah, simple. That's super simple.
So if you're on the ghosthat.net network or looking at our site, please check out some of the other podcasts that we have. You can also check out some films that both Chad and I have done in some way or fashion on the YouTube. Redacted Media.
Mm-hmm.
Take a look at us and enjoy that. And I'll just leave you with this. Lord loves a working man. Don't trust Whitey. See a doctor and get rid of it. All right. Thank you, everybody.
I make it a rule never to get involved with possessed people.
Actually, it's more of a guideline than a rule.
The Filmological Society is a production of Redacted Media in association with Ghost Hat Media. For more information, find us on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, or visit us at www.ghosthat.net.